It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Julie Perkins and I'm here with my co-host Jenny Mattingly. Today we're joined by Joe Davidson from the Washington Post, and he's with us on the phone, Charlie Clark from GovExec, and Jason Miller from Federal News Radio. And we're all here to discuss current federal workforce issues and to look ahead at what we can expect in 2014. Just a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. So why don't we start with Joe on the phone. Why don't you describe a little bit about what you typically cover as a reporter?
Well, I look at a range of issues involving federal employees, federal workplace issues, federal contractors. I certainly try to keep tabs on legislation, particularly hearings on the Hill that deal with federal employees. Information from readers about subjects that they would like for me to pursue, often dealing with benefits or whistleblower issues, which is an area I'm particularly interested in. So it's a fairly broad range of issues, but within the sphere of the federal workplace.
Okay. Charlie?
Yeah, well, for government executive, I do a lot of the management and performance and organization of agencies. Lately, I've been covering a lot on the IRS and the Affordable Care Act controversies and some property disposal issues, the General Services Administration. My colleagues do more of the pay and the benefits.
Okay. Jason?
Well, I get the joy of doing everything that they talked about and then probably a little bit more. So probably the whole, you know, mile wide, I like to say 6 inches deep. But, you know, Federal News Radio, as people hopefully are listening and understand, we do basically look at things three ways, you know, policy, programs, and people news. Personally, I look at a lot of IT, a lot of procurement. But for us, you know, workforce issues, pay and benefits issues is probably the issue that we spend most of our time with. And, you know, we blame Mike Causey for that reason, you know, because he is the rock star. So pay and benefits issues is definitely the top of mind.
And welcome to all of you. Thank you for being here today.
I think it's the first time, isn't it?
Not for me, but for Julie.
Yeah. I bet for us.
Oh, for you guys,
yeah,
I was going to say.
Yeah, first for me.
So first time on this particular show, although I know you guys are all veterans of both talking and writing, so right. We appreciate you guys joining us for this.
Happy to be here.
And I know federal employees have a lot of issues on their plates these days. There's a lot of news going on, lots of things we want to cover, so get started, Julie, I think, on a couple topics that let you kick this off.
Well, I was curious about the end of the year wrap up, the budget conference. We keep hearing something new every day, and I know that you all have been covering that. What's the latest? Are you hearing any? Do you think we're headed for another shutdown?
Oh, look at our crystal ball.
Yeah.
I you know, it's funny because I was talking with someone just the other day, and their take was, yeah, we're heading that way. There's no way, but I think, based on what I'm seeing on Capitol Hill, that the fact is they do have this conference committee, that they are looking at a small-scale deal of some sort. They feel like a shutdown is not in anyone's best interest. So I get the impression that they will avoid it unless if something dramatic happens. If you look at that last time, I think they were probably a lot of the members on the same page, but the Republicans ended up capitulating to the Tea Party people. I'm not sure they would do that again. You know, we don't follow politics in terms of the R's and the D's that closely, but just from a federal employee perspective, I think they realized the impact it had. And I don't think anyone won with the shutdown. And in some cases, people say the Republicans maybe lost. I think that they're not going to have that same experience again.
Yeah, I think the Republicans have other issues they want to run in 2014 on, notably the rollout of the health care law. And so it's probably a sliver of them who really would want to threaten a shutdown again, which may give the Democrats a little bit of leverage on, say, the issue of extending unemployment insurance, which is one of the sticking points right now.
And Joe, I know that you've covered quite a bit the chain CPI issue. I imagine that's quite a big issue with your readers.
Well, certainly is, particularly the retirees, and it also extends beyond the federal workforce. I mean, this is something that would apply to Social Security recipients generally. But the federal retirees are certainly a very vocal group. They have an active association, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, NARF, which is very active. And I think I probably get more mail from the retiree crew than everybody else combined. And so they do pay close attention to this, and that is something that is definitely on the agenda. It's something that President Obama has suggested, and in addition to it having some support from the Republicans.
Well, and it was in Simpson Bowles as well. It's been around, and I keep hearing budget deal.
Right.
Yeah, I think I would just jump in and follow and echo what Joe said. I would agree with you that I think chain CPI is coming. I think there's even though they had a rally back during the shutdown against it, and there's several congressmen and members of the Senate who came out against it. I think if you see the bills that are coming through, mm-hmm. you see Simpson-Bowles, you see the Obama administration, I think it's very similar to the changes in federal retirement that we're going to see that's being proposed as part of the small-scale budget deal. There's enough handwriting on the wall that says, okay, there's not a lot of political capital going to be spent to push back. I don't know if Charlie or Joe, you guys have a take.
Well, I would just add that chain CPI is something that can be presented as a more accurate way of measuring inflation. Now, that's debated, so it wouldn't have to be portrayed as a cut in retiree benefits, but obviously the retirees don't agree with that. But it's interesting that Congressman Ryan, who's leading the House negotiators in the talks, has dismissed chain CPI in the sense he doesn't want to give the Democrats credit for offering a big concession if it's simply a more accurate measure.
And you can email Charlie Clark for all your complaints from the retirees who are listening to C. Clark. No, I'm just kidding, Charlie.
Yeah.
And Jason, you were referring to the proposed increase in contributions that employees are going to be maybe required to make?
Yeah, exactly. Part of the budget deal that we're hearing, and there was a press conference yesterday for the National Treasury Employees Union, the American Federation of Government Employees, to kind of make some noise about the lack of support of this, is the idea that employees under FERS specifically, who contribute right now 0.8% to their pensions, would have to contribute more. How much more, it's hard to say. I think Paul Ryan had one budget idea of 5.5%. The Obama
administration, it was all the way up there. It was 1.2.
Yeah, I think Obama administration had 1.2%. And then there's a new bill from an Oklahoma congressman, Brandon Stein, who wants to do 0.4% a year over the next 3 years. So again, 1.2%. So that piece of FERS would change. Now, it's interesting. I wrote a story about this, and I'll plug myself here for federalnews.com. I got an email from a reader said, "Whoa, Jason, your story's a little not telling the whole story. There's a more complex thing going on here. There's a three-part piece to federal retirees under FERS. There's the defined pension, which is what they are talking about in Congress, but there's also TSP and also Social Security. Mm-hmm. So we can't lose sight that federal employees don't just contribute just 0.8% to the retirement. There is the TSP and the other piece, Social Security."
Hmm. And Joe, I'm guessing you probably hear about this from your readers. I know when I work on federal employee issues, this is one of the biggest things that people are worried about from the budget deal perspective, and it seems like it is definitely on the table from what I'm hearing.
Are you talking about the hits to federal retirement?
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's always been reported as one of the main things that the Republicans in particular are looking at. The Democrats, of course, have come out strongly against it. Certainly the congressional delegation in the D.C. area, Virginia District and Maryland. And it's something that Frank Wolf, by the way, a Republican,
yes,
has also spoken against. So he is also strongly supporting federal employees on this front. So it's not all of the Republicans kind of going after the Fed in this sense, but certainly the most of the Republicans, I think, are on the side that they feel that they can hit Feds once again. And the unions, of course, and the other employee associations are very much against this. But nobody at this point seems to know really what is going to happen. So it's kind of like everybody is gearing up for the big fight, but it's not clear yet just what exactly is the target. I mean, I think it's fair to say that federal employee benefits, federal retirement benefits, are the target, but just exactly how they will be hit, as we've just discussed, isn't known yet.
Oh, interesting. And we're going to continue this conversation after a short break. You've been listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I've been joined by Jenny Manley, Joe Davidson from The Washington Post, Charlie Clark from GovExec, and Jason Miller from Federal News Radio. And we'll continue our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're having our reporters roundtable to take a look back at the federal workforce news in 2013 and make predictions as best we can for 2014.
You know, and maybe that's a good place to circle back around to. We've been talking about budget deal, what's on the radar for next week. I mean, we've got this December 13th thing coming up, but that wasn't necessarily, it's becoming the biggest story, but that wasn't necessarily the biggest story a month ago. 3 months ago, we've hit some things that'll probably, unfortunately, come back around next year, like furloughs, possible shutdown. We've mentioned, you know, looking at sequester. There were some big federal stories that have led us up to this budget deal where we are right now. And I'm wondering, which of those did you sort of think was the biggest issue out there that we also may still be facing right now? So, Charlie?
I would pick the IRS so-called scandal. Whether it's really a scandal seems to depend on your political views, but it combined agency management and politics in an agency that is around the country well known and not necessarily loved, and it brought to light a lot of issues of federal management and communication with the public. Mm-hmm. That I just think that story, even though it seems to be fading now, it will be emblematic of the year. And of course, there's some Republicans who still want to use it. Joe Jordan of Ohio as the main theme of the 2014 campaign. He may be updating that strategy. But.
And they're still having hearings. I think I read one of your articles where now the general counsel is under fire for statements
yes.
that have been previously made.
Yes.
So this could keep going on and on and on.
Yes.
And it's unfortunate, you know, I think back, Francis Rose here at Federal News Radio asked me about this time last year what one of my predictions was going forward. And I said, federal employee scandals. And here we are looking at IRS and continuing issues on this. So, but there's been some other things that are out there too.
Well, it's interesting, Charlie, because I guess when you bring up the IRS, I haven't thought of it in that regard, and I think it's a great point. The fact is, this the way it rolled out. It's not just an IRS political issue, but it's really a management issue. And what you're seeing in a lot of ways is this: 5 years into this administration, the dirty laundry starting to get kind of put out there, because I think it happens in every administration over time. Mistakes definitely are made. People make bad decisions, and that puts out there. But I'm going to go in a different direction, because that's what I do. I'm going to say that that maybe not the biggest story, because the shutdown was probably the biggest story, but that's, I don't want to go over that ground again. So I'll say from my perspective of where we sit, I think the biggest story is the lack of leadership from the Office of Management and Budget. And let me put a finer point on that. Not the fact that the people who were there didn't do a good job, but the people, there was not enough people there. The time it took to get a director and a permanent director just took too long. When Jeff Zients left in May, and the way he left was very interesting. He just closed down one day and walked out. And, you know, I'm sure he gave notice, but nobody knew about it. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have a deputy director for management for years, and because he kept getting pulled into being the OMB director. So then Danny Werfel was the deputy director for management, but Danny was wearing two hats. And then all of a sudden he goes to the IRS. Well, now then Steve Van Roekel, who the federal CIO. So now he's wearing two hats. And I think that lack of leadership at the top definitely trickles down to the agencies and the priorities and the goals. And I think one of the reasons, in healthcare.gov is another big story that we maybe will address. One of the reasons for those failings is that lack of leadership from OMB. And that's a shame, because OMB has both the power and the authority to do so much good. And if they don't have that people in place, if Steve Van Roekel's got to wear two hats, if Danny Werfel's always wearing two hats, if Joe Jordan, the OFPP administrator, is wearing two hats for some time as well, that just takes away from what they really should be doing, which is what they're good at, which is technology or procurement or whatever. Plus, John Barry leaving left OPM director.
They didn't have a deputy either.
They didn't have a deputy either. And poor Lane Kaplan's waiting to go on to be a judge. So she was really had a foot out the door as well as the acting director. So I think this, and I know it's a second term issue, but I think it's a lack of recognition in many ways that every administration happens about the importance of certain agencies. And I'll name three: OMB, OPM, and GSA. When you don't realize the importance that these agencies play in the running of government, you lose sight of how the government runs.
Well, that's a government
It's very interesting, because John Barry and Jeffrey Zients worked very closely when they were both in office. They worked on things like hiring reform, for example, which had been a wreck for many, many years, and I don't think that it's necessarily fully fixed, but they certainly made some strides in that area, getting them moving away from KSAs, for mm-hmm. example, although I still mm-hmm. get letters from time to time with people complaining that they're still around, just in another form. But I think they did make some strides in hiring reform, and it marked a very close relationship at that point between the Office of Personnel Management and the Office of Management and Budget.
Yeah, in fact, I just quoted Paul Volcker at a National Academy for Public Administration event, saying that the biggest problem in the government is the fact that talented people get strung along for 6 months without getting their resume responded to, and they go elsewhere.
Well, and that continues to be an issue. We hear that from folks all the time, and there's talk at, you know, KSAs at the GS level, ECQs at the senior executive level, and, you know, there's some confusion and movement around that. That's certainly right. Possibly something that's going to be on the radar again coming up here.
To Charlie's point, I think I read where DHS leadership, there's 40% vacancies.
I think it's like 11 of the top 12 or 11 of the top 15 leadership.
Is it that high?
Yeah.
A lot of acting. That runs into another thing, if I can add to that, particularly at DHS. DHS, is, when it comes to morale, it's been a basket case for mm-hmm. its entirety. And a lot of that, I think, had to do with the fact how it was cobbled together by all of these different agencies. But, you know, it's been around now for some time, and you can only use that excuse for so long. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you can use it forever. But it's whatever the excuse or the reason, it's still having big morale problems. And I think that if you don't have, committed and consistent leadership at the top, then you can definitely have morale problems throughout the middle and toward the bottom as well. And so that might be playing a part.
You know, just to build on that, I think, Joe, you hit the nail on the head. This administration, I think, has done a fairly poor job of being the morale booster. One of the things I've heard about over the times, and you know, you and Charlie have been around maybe longer than I have covering this stuff, but when the Clinton administration came into office, they met with senior executives. When George Bush came in, he met with senior executives.
Yeah, as a group.
As a group, yes. Sorry.
Right, they did an all hands, yes. Called everybody in.
And I don't think the Obama administration, specifically the president, has met with senior executives. And that was you should have done that day one or month one or month two of that administration. You should have done it again every year, because those are the people that make things happen. And when you forget about those people, you lose sight of where you're going. And that's when you go back to Charlie's point of the IRS and healthcare.gov, and let's fasten the furious, whether you agree or disagree with what happened, what Darrell Issa is showing. That's a lack of management, and I think that's what's missing.
Right. And one of the issues in the lack of management is that it's not a sexy topic. And I hear this said, Senator Mark Warner always says this, reorganization and reforms of communication among the agencies, it's very hard to get people excited about it. And as the healthcare.gov episode reveals, the execution of these policies done out the limelight, away from the politics, is equally or more important than the policy that's setting in the first place.
But, you know, when it comes to morale, I think that what has caused the low morale is it's more of the things like the pay freeze and the sequester and the shutdown and kind of the Fed bashing that you're much more likely to get from Republicans than from Democrats, although it certainly must be noted that the pay freeze was initiated by the Obama administration and then extended by the Obama administration, and Congress, Republicans and Democrats, then basically went along with it. So I think there's plenty of blame to go around on that. But from my point of view, I think that the pay freeze, the sequester, the shutdown are the leading causes of morale, and not the fact that he didn't meet with the senior executives. Because there's far more, I mean, there's only a handful of senior executives relatively to the whole workforce, but it's the whole workforce that has these low morale.
And absolutely. And what's interesting, Mike Causey has said that 2010, when Congress passed a bunch of federal pay and benefit laws. And
sick leave, reemployed annuitants. There was a whole bunch of things.
Mike Causey said that was the banner year for federal employees, and things have just gone downhill from there. And I think you're right, Joe, that the morale issue is definitely spread across not just this SES, but really, I mean, if you think leadership begins at the top, but it's also a bottom up, both sides are getting hit, and that's why morale is no good.
Here's another reason that morale is low is the crackdown on travel and conferences, because a lot of people feel that they're being treated not as professionals, and that a lot of the networking work that they used to get done with the private sector and with other agency colleagues is not happening, and that webcasts and video conferencing is just not equal to being there in person.
And in fact, I got a memo from an agency, which I will remain nameless, regarding Christmas parties or holiday parties. And one of the things they said was, please have it on this date. Please be smart, and you know, don't use any electricity around like crock pots or warming trays. If you decorate, please be sure that you are non-denominational in your decorating. I mean, really, stuff like you go, okay, well, I understand some people do go over the top and some people aren't smart, but going back to your point, don't treat us like they're five. And
right.
You know,
well, way to put a damper on any sort of holiday celebration or say that, you know, we don't trust you to do anything right now. That's the message.
Or to be smart. Or only have it from, like, there's a great scene from Caddyshack. I'm sorry to bring this up, but, you know, the caddies can have the pool from 12 to 12:15.
Right.
And that was the same thing with the holiday party. You can have it from this date on this time.
I mean, it's kind of like we've hit rock bottom on some of this stuff. You know, you think, my gosh, is this what it's come to? It apparently is what it's come to. So on that point. But, you know, I think the conference and travel issue is really interesting, because that's one you hear about, but you don't hear about it. You know, the scandals really brought that to light. But you don't hear about some of the consequences of it. I was talking to some scientists from NIH, and in the scientific community, you have to be out there in the international bodies, in all of these private forums, to share your information. That's how you get published. That's how you share it. You can't keep a lid on that. And so the question is, what are we stopping now that's really going to hurt people in the long run? And I don't really see an end to the conference training issue. In fact, there's a lot of push to cut it down more.
But I'll give industry a lot of credit. If you look at places like FCA and Affirm and IAC, they've all added continuing education credits to their conferences. So they found a way around the band. Because if you're going to get education, it's no longer just a conference. It's a training and education session. So I give industry a lot of credit for morphing as seeing the everything change.
And that's probably a good thing, too, to give people credit. I mean, that's not a bad thing. Maybe that was a change we needed. So be interesting to see if that's still out there.
Well, because most of those conferences were educational and there was training. It wasn't boondoggles.
It was all about the free food. As reporters, we know.
Right. And also the travel industry likes them for helping them prosper and create jobs.
Yeah, I think sometimes there can be an overreaction to things like the the GSA conference and all of that. I mean, I think, getting to the situation where you cut off your nose to spite your face. And the cutbacks, I agree, can certainly hurt morale. And I think they can be detrimental in the long run because it can really hurt training. I mean, because a lot of what goes on, is not just the session. It's the networking in the hallway outside of the session where people exchange ideas. I think teleconferencing has a big role. It can probably be used a lot more. But folks need to appreciate that they're going to lose something, in the process.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very wise. We have to stop here for a break. We'll continue with our discussion after this break. And a word from our sponsor. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 15 a.m.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
So you're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm joined by Joe Davidson from The Washington Post, who's on the phone with us, Charlie Clark from Government Executive, and Jason Miller from Federal News Radio. We'll continue. Let's continue our discussion.
That's right. And when we left, we were talking about conferences and training, which all stemmed from some of the travels. Part of one of the points I was thinking in my head is that some of this stuff, things have changed. I mean, back 5 years ago, when some of this conference spending took place that they talk about, government was different. The budget situation was different. Different times, different folks in there. And so now we're looking at this several years later in a very different lens with a very different budget situation that I don't see changing. So I wonder if more of this stuff is going to come out where we think, scandal. And, part of it's the lens, but things have changed.
Well, some of these inspector generals' reports are delayed by 2 or 3 years, which mm-hmm. is why a good example is the U.S. Marshals Service was just criticized for spending too much on swag, promotional items and coins and T-shirts and things. But, one could argue that that helps brand the agency, and certain agencies need a public reputation. But thing is that it was 3 years ago, and it was before the Obama administration had laid down its prohibitions on spending on swag, and the current director wasn't in office then, and so they wanted to make that clear. We tried to make that clear in our coverage.
I find that the IG reports, I get a little frustrated by GAO and IG reports, and not because they don't do good work, because they do, and a lot of times they do bring up important issues, but it's a snapshot in time. So for someone to sit back and say, well, this happened in 2010, so therefore it's still happening now, is an unfair. And a lot of times what happens is the agency reads the draft report, comments on the draft report, knows that there's problems and makes changes. So by the time the IG report comes out or the GAO report comes out, the changes are already in progress. So you have to take it from what it's worth. So will there be more scandals? Yes, because there always are scandals. Because again, I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier. People make mistakes and sometimes people are just stupid. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think you got to look at it from the right perspective that when I deal with feds and contractors, I'd say 99% of them are good, hardworking, honest people. And I think that gets lost too often in this discussion.
Right. It really does. It's become this mismanagement. I mean, we talked a little bit, mentioned Affordable Care Act and, you know, healthcare.gov. And, you know, part of that is silver lining is talking about management practices, talking about procurement, talking about how the government does its business. It's not because people necessarily were bad or out to fail. They weren't. But we've got a government-wide strategy and some management issues that probably do need to be looked at. But some of this makes it hard because we're looking at it 3 years later with snapshots in time and looking at that. And, you know, I think that's
an
issue.
Well, I'm hopeful that the healthcare rollout is going to expose more of the IT procurement problems that are pervasive, I think, in, throughout the government.
Yes. I mean, the FBI and the Pentagon have had cost overruns in IT procurement for years and years, and it's a government-wide problem, and partly because the technology keeps changing, that they keep setting the policy, fighting the last war.
And I would say, Joe, you guys at the Post have done an excellent job with covering this healthcare rollout. And I think because of your coverage, your colleagues and yourself, that's going to make the change to IT procurement that much better and quicker happening because of the solid coverage. So kudos to you guys.
Well, thank you. But, you know, I think that really the president has pointed to this in two or three speeches during his mea culpas about the rollout. Mm-hmm. He has talked about how kind of behind the times the IT procurement process is across the board. And so I certainly hope the Washington Post coverage can spur action. But I tell you, if the folks don't respond to President Obama being upset, then I don't know what hope we have.
Well, and I think some of this, I was talking to somebody yesterday about IT procurement. And part of the problem is, you know, some of this stuff was taken out of house in the 90s when we did National Performance Review. People were contracted out. You don't always have folks in-house who are what I want to call global managers of something that really understand procurement, that understand you know, how the different pots of money are going. They're not just signing off on a contract. And so I think that's an issue where all ties back into the training, to having the right people in place. And I don't know.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Joe. And I was going to say, I don't know if you guys are seeing that as you're reporting on these agencies.
Well, on that point, Jerry Connolly from Virginia and Daryl Issa from California, he's chairman of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, and they are often at loggerheads. You go to some of those committee meetings, can be a very partisan committee, and neither of those two are, you know, will hold their tongue. But they have joined together with legislation that would call on a number of agencies to have a chief CIO.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
The word, and the operable word there is A, because now some of these large agencies can have 10 or 11 people who are called chief information officer. And so their point is there should be one person with that responsibility. The buck would stop at that person. And now he or she could have a number of assistants or deputies or whatever they want to call them. But there would be one person responsible for, you know, for the information technology operations in a particular agency. And Issa and Connolly hope that would help improve the IT procurement process across the government.
I'll just jump in and say that's the bill that Joe's referring to, FITARA, the Federal IT Acquisition Reform Act, is actually going to be taken up by the Senate next week. It was part of the defense authorization bill. So it actually could be, you know, could be law within a month or less.
Oh, interesting.
But I think part of the issue that's going on goes back to what Jenny said with the training of people. And in fact, the OFPP, Office of Federal Procurement Policy, is going to be coming out with new certification requirements for program and project managers. Now, this is not related to healthcare.gov. This is something that's been in the works probably for a year, you know, how these policies take. But it's a lack of institutional knowledge, and when you find good people, they leave, and when you train people, they're not trained the right way. I think it's been a problem for the government, as Charlie pointed out, for years. And what healthcare.gov, the problems with healthcare.gov did was point out once again that these problems have not been fixed. I did a very interesting interview this week with Mark Foreman, the former OMB IT administrator for e-government, and Paul Brubaker, who's now over at DOD. Both of them were part of the team that wrote the Clinger-Cohen Act back in 1996. And both of them, you know, said together, we don't believe that the IT procurement rules, IT management rules are all that bad. It's they're not being implemented the right way. Goes back to the management issue. So I think healthcare.gov, just to kind of put a circle on this, was not a failing of IT. It was not a failing necessarily of procurement. It was a failing of management. Right. And I think that is what needs to be addressed, not how agencies buy procurement, because as DOD has shown you time and again, they can get something done when they have to.
Yeah, and to that I would add that DOD is also pursuing acquisition reform with some help from members of Congress. And one of the big problems is a brain drain, which is government-wide, but the acquisition professionals, they have an acquisition university to train people, but they're just deemed to have never recovered from big cuts in the civilian workforce in the 1990s. So in the larger picture, the brain drain of retirees in government and the threat to the in-house expertise is one of the long-term problems that I would point to.
And in fact, it was Congress's fault that we're in this situation now, and nobody ever points that out from the administration, whatever administration we're talking about. I remember very early on, I covered a small business hearing, and the OSDBU, the small business director from DOD, testified, and he just got railed on. And afterwards, I said to him, I said, why didn't you fight back? And he goes, Jason, it's part of the show. I said, but this was Congress's fault that you're in this situation of not being able to support small businesses because they cut your contracting staff. He goes, I know.
They cut the budgets. Same thing. They don't give people a budget. They don't give them any numbers to work for long term. And nobody stands up and says that.
Right. Well, that's the format of these hearings where the witnesses, because they know the Congress has the power of the purse, or cannot debate, can't pose their own questions. And I've seen members of Congress ask a question and then not listen to the answer and go talk to colleagues while the federal representative is just earnestly talking away.
And time and again it happens. Yeah.
Right. It's more of a show for the C-SPAN audience that they get to say they were really tough against that particular agency or federal employee.
Well, you know, that the brain drain issue makes me think back, and I'm curious if all of you are seeing this too, the retirement tsunami. We've talked about that for how many years have we said there's going to be a retirement tsunami? But I'm seeing the numbers tick up. Part of this goes to the morale issue that Joe was talking about. People are leaving. Why do you stay and get beat up on when you can go someplace else? Are we seeing a retirement tsunami, or is it more because of the morale issue?
Joe? It might be hard to distinguish. I mean, the numbers at some point were going to go up anyway, because even though kind of this wave was delayed, people didn't stop getting older.
Right.
And so it was at some point, no matter what the situation, the numbers were going to start going up. I do think that, certainly from talking with people on this whole morale question, and we did a lot of on this, you know, during the shutdown, there certainly was a lot of talk about this speeding up the retirement process for a number of people, because as you well know, the way the retirement is figured, it's based on the high 5 years. And so if you're not making much money in the last three of those years, you might figure you can go out and do something else. And so I think it is all kind of tied together. It's difficult for me, at least, to say exactly how much the shutdown or the sequester or the pay freeze contributed to it compared to the advancing age of the workforce and the baby boomers who are getting older every year in any case. But I think it's certainly something that is going to be a challenge, a personnel and human relations challenge for the government now and in the years to come.
And that's where we see the brain drain. If we don't train people coming up, if we don't do that, you don't have the right people in place to handle the procurement issues, the contract issues, the management issues.
Well, I would just to build on what Joe said, I don't think either that there's been the tsunami. I think it's been a steady drip, 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 drip. Right. And it's after a while when you look back and go, oh, look how many people have left and how much institutional knowledge has left. And one thing the government does not do a good job of is knowledge management, is capturing that person. One perfect example is this, is OPM had the idea of a phased retirement, or I think it was the legislation had the idea of phased retirement, and OPM was supposed to put the regulations out. It's been a little while. I've had people write to me who said, hey, when's this coming out? I don't know. I'll check with OPM. We're working on it. Well, they finally put out the draft. Well, all these people are saying, I would love to use phased retirement, but now it's too late. I'm out. I'm done. And I think that's a huge opportunity they're missing. So they're not capturing that knowledge. They're not mentoring new people.
Right.
So what you have is the bathtub effect of a lot of people on the front end of their career, a lot of people on the back end of their career, but no one in the middle.
And everybody's seen that since the 90s. It goes back to NPR. Agencies were left with that. And, you know, it's one of the many issues that are facing federal employees right now.
We're going to stop here to hear from our sponsor. When we return, we'll wrap up our discussion, and you've been listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio on 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering our last segment of the show, and we appreciate you listening to us.
And when we left, we were talking about succession planning, you know, some of the holes that are in there, you know, and I don't know if different agencies do it better. That's one of the many, many things out there. Nothing's government wide. Nothing's, you know, there's not a lot of, and this goes back to the OMB point. I'm going to circle all the way back to something you said earlier. It's not just agency leadership. It's not just individual management challenges. It's from the top everywhere. And whether that's going to change. But I wonder if we're going to see any of that change. And some of it is all circles back to the budget. It circles back to Congress. If you don't have the money there, you can't do that.
I'll offer you two thoughts on that. First is the IRS actually does a really good job with knowledge management. They have someone who's actually like a chief knowledge management officer. They have a chief learning officer. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a great model that other agencies can follow. But the other piece that you know, when you go back to training and budget, this doesn't cost much. I worked at a place before Federal News Radio early in my career that had something called the beer truck memo. And I thought this was a classic thing. Basically, the goal was write down everything you do every day, write down all your sources, write down everything, anybody who's worthwhile to talk to in your industry. So if you get hit by a beer truck, Charlie could come in and pick up your memo and keep going forward. And I thought that's a great concept. Right. I mean, you know, there's obviously secret sources and stuff that we all have. But you know, hey, I talked to the folks at the Senior Executives Association. I talked to the folks at Federal Managers Association. Here's my contact there. All that, once a year, you update it. So it's always there. And I don't think agencies do that. And for instance, the intelligence community had something called Intellipedia, the idea of Wikipedia, and that was really a brain dump. And they said, I remember hearing about this in the mid-2000s, where people would say, well, the biggest user of Intellipedia is actually a guy who's been in the government for 35 years, who literally is just brain dumping all the stuff he knows onto Intellipedia so everyone else can benefit from it. And that's not what's being done. And that doesn't cost anything.
But it's a little counter to human nature, though, because a lot of people want to be indispensable and they want to hoard the knowledge.
Right. Turf wars. I mean, there's always some of that going on. Although I have to say, I like Jason's beer truck theory because I've always just used a metro bus theory.
Yeah, at least I'm the metro bus.
It's a beer truck
That's
theory.
That's what I tell my colleagues. Just in case you're hit by a bus tomorrow, paper the file.
We're journalists. We think of beer.
Right. Yeah. We're going to have to change
we're
that in
change
our office.
That.
So, you know, and that's interesting. Is Intellipedia still around? I don't, you know, is it still?
It is, but it's just they don't talk about it very much anymore. Okay. I think it's kind of from an Intel perspective. Well, that's old news. Same thing with like the idea of A space and C space and J space, which were collaborative spaces that analysts could get together from different parts of the intelligence community, but had similar ideas or similar things they were working on.
Okay. So much with everything you hear about it, it disappears and doesn't mean it's not going on. Sometimes there are some great things going on in the government that you don't hear about as much, which, you know, one of the things we did talk a little bit about at the very beginning was looking forward to 2014. And I know that's hard because none of us have crystal balls. If we did, we'd be making $1 million and might not be sitting here. So, not just looking forward, but are there some things like Intellipedia? Are there other things that you guys cover that we don't always hear about all the time that you think, hey, somebody really should be focusing on this more? I really like to cover this because it is a big issue for the federal government, but nobody's talking about it. And one of those that I think comes up a lot of times, and some of them come and go. Some of them are big for a month and then they disappear. One right now that people talk about off and on, and it's a current story and I'm interested in it, is the contractor executive caps. That's right. A story that people talk about capping the money, but nobody really talked about it in any sort of content. And then they just raised it today. It'll probably disappear again in a week or so.
Yeah, it's been allowed to fester for several years. But there's a clash between the private industry people who believe they need to offer the federal reimbursement for higher executive salaries so that they can recruit top talent. And then you have the government employees unions and some in Congress who argue that the taxpayer shouldn't be subsidizing these lavish executive private sector salaries.
And it's interesting, Joe, I know you talked about that a little bit today, I think.
Yeah, I did write about that today. I think that I wouldn't be surprised to see some congressional action on that. There are maybe 3 or 4 pieces of legislation on the Hill. And I think now that you're approaching $1 million to pay these folks, and when you read the Federal Register, some people really could get paid more than that because that $952,000 cap, as they call it, applies to the top 5 most highly paid people in any firm. So theoretically, at least, the federal government could reimburse the salaries of somebody who was below the top 5 level at a rate more than that. Now, I think that the likelihood of that happening probably isn't great, but the potential for it happening, and you have this $1 million figure out there, I think that's the kind of thing that can get the attention of people on the Hill. Because, it's not as if people are even limited. These people who are getting this $952,000 from the federal government, that's not necessarily their whole salary because their company can pay them more than that.
Right.
And as the Senior Executive Association pointed out, you have senior executives who are managing very big operations, just like these private executives. And, of course, they're not making anywhere close to $900,000.
Just slightly less.
And so there is that disparity there that I think is only grown. And one other factor is how much it's grown over the years. Like it's not like it's just keeping up with inflation. It's been, OMB said it was like 55% increase, I think, over 4 years. But who gets that kind of raise, And Stan Soloway at the Professional Services Council, of course, says that it's not a raise, and I think he's, I think he makes some good arguments, but nonetheless, when you come down to a figure of that magnitude and compare it to what some senior executives are making, and some of these people are enormously talented, and when you go to any of these awards programs, and you see the kinds of things that they're doing to save the federal government money, it is just totally impressive. And they're not making that kind of money. They don't expect to make that kind of money. They're never going to make that kind of money in the federal government. But it does point to a really serious disparity.
I think, Joe, actually, you hit the nail on the head in several regards. The people, and let's pick on a big company like Lockheed Martin, their chief executive, and you see it in the Post when you guys write about the executive salaries, they're making $25 million a year, so the government's response of $950,000 is only a trickle when it comes to how much they're really making when you look at benefits and stock options and all that. But at the same time, I think there is a movement in Congress, Joe's absolutely right, to change it because there's actually a provision in the Defense Authorization Bill, which the Senate will take up next week, just like FITARA, and I think they're going to change the formula. And it's really interesting, and I think Stan Soloway from PSA pointed this out, why would OFPP release a notice now, this week, when this bill is going to come up next week? And why'd they release it for 2012 when we're in 2014? There's no logic here. And of course, you're not sure when you read through the Federal Register notice, it doesn't present you with any logic. It doesn't say, well, we did this now because under statutory we missed a deadline and Congress is asking us. They just all of a sudden did it. So there's a lot of head scratching going on about this raise, and also it's retro back to January 1st, 2012.
Well, do you think they did it for timing purposes? Because the numbers are so shocking at this point that maybe it will be the push to change the formula.
Yes, because the White House also wants to change the formula. They don't want to do it in quite the same way the members of Congress.
No, actually, it's their provision in the bill. If you read our colleague Jared Serbu here at Federal News Radio looked at the metadata of that provision, and actually it was authored by Matthew Blum, who is the basically associate deputy administrator at OFPP. So actually, this is their number. So it's just fascinating that it's probably going to get changed.
Hmm. Well, and I think they want to cap it at $400,000.
President's salary.
Oh. Which, is...
Some suggested the vice president's salary is...
$230,000, yeah.
That's AFGE's, right.
That's right. And some of those proposals have been out there for a while, so it will be interesting to see if we do get a defense authorization, if anything moves. I don't know that anything... I like to be an optimist and think we're gonna get some of this stuff done. But we're almost to the end of the year, and they've got a week left, I think, when they're both in session. So it's going to be interesting to see... See if that happens.
And then they come back and there's, I think, a week and then the shutdown potential.
I like that you go 15th, straight to the shutdown. Yeah. I'm going with CR.
That's my
prediction.
The end of the CR. I think it's going to be a CR too, but that's they hit back these back-to-back deadlines.
Right, they really do. And so my prediction is, looking forward, what do feds have to be worried about? Continuing resolution, same old, same old. I don't know. Am I off base on that? Joe or
no,
Jason?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that... like you said, same old, same old. In some ways, it seems like we've seen this movie not just once before, but repeatedly.
Right. But also, sequestration is going to be worse in fiscal 2014 than 2013, many people have pointed out.
Particularly against the defense arena. So
now they've got some big cuts.
I would throw in there that along with all this CR versus shutdown versus sequestration, I think what you're going to see for 2014, if you want to look a little forward, is I think there's a serious risk, especially within DOD, but across the entire government, of rifts, of actual layoffs. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be the saddest thing, because to go back to the lack of training, to the lack of management, to the lack of ability to get things done because of how short-staffed people are, if they have to start riffing people, that would not only be the morale killer to tag all the way back, but they would just the detriment to the government's ability to serve the public would be awful. And then it just would be the icing on the rotten cake.
Mm-hmm. Right. All of a sudden, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Right. Bad government becomes bad government. I mean, that's, people have this idea out here that government is broken. That might do it. At this point, if we're doing that, I like to think that there are a lot of people innovating and doing some really fantastic things. But you can only do so much with the resources that you're given before people just throw up their hands and they're done with it. So seems like we've got some challenging times ahead.
We do. And hopefully we'll be able to continue this discussion later on in 2014. Jenny and I want to thank our guests, Joe Davidson, Washington Post on the phone, Charlie Clark from Government Executive, and Jason Miller from Federal News Radio. This has been a very fascinating conversation we've had today. That's all the time we have now for the show. Thank you for joining us. Fed Talk is brought to you by the law firm is Shaw, Bransford & Roth, and have a good weekend.